Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay. I reside in Chicago, Illinois, and I am the host for the presentation today. Today is Sunday, May 31st, 2026. The share ID numbers for Friday, May 29th are the following. For the 7 a.m. meeting, Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 23,502. And 23,502, the 10 a.m. meeting on Friday, 23,503. That's 23503. This morning, A Vision for You presents Character Defects, Content with Patient Improvements. So for most of us, if you're like me at all, you know, we share some commonalities in these rooms, right? We arrived to the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous beaten down by this disease. I know I did. And when I look at it, there was great pain, there was misery when I got here, and it drove me to seek help. And I have yet to meet the person that comes to OA on a winning streak. I didn't. I was on a big losing streak. But okay, that's where I was. And for me, a spiritual awakening, it feels more like a rolling sort of process rather than a static kind of snapshot. You know, in other words, it's true that the obsession to eat my alcoholic foods has been driven out. You know, there's some neutrality around that, and that's a great thing. But what's rolling or ongoing about the nature of this process for me is through daily implementation of these steps, my higher power presents new insights, you know, new clarity over time. And it's still unfolding. And it unfolds incrementally for someone like me, as I continue to be shaped and molded by my creator. And so what our text leads us to is perhaps a deeper understanding that through patience we can be restored to sanity. You know, Katie's gonna be talking about patience. I don't have a lot of it, but I'm getting better. Our perceptions change, you know, and this happens over time. As I say, it's ever evolving. And I think of an analogy, I'm gonna quickly hand it over to Katie here, but you know, the canvas of a painter does not come to life as a result of, like, you know, expertly mixing the colors and choosing the finest, you know, painting brushes and tools. No, the canvas as a work of art comes to life by the artist imagining, you know, does sort of an imaginative completion of the work of art, and they give birth to something new, something sense paint and brushes and the easel, you know, and I'm not an artist, but I just thought that analogy when I heard it was pretty good. And the brush strokes are brought to life in a way in which the perceptions of the people viewing the painting, people that see the painting are changed, but also the artist's perceptions are changed as well. And I'm reminded of the words in the big book on page 57 and in the chapter, We Agnostics. It says, even so has God restored us all to our right minds. To this man, so they're referring to Fitzmaio, the revelation was sudden. So that may happen to some people, it was sudden. But some of us, I'd say many of us, I've seen, grow into it more slowly. But he has come to all who honestly seek him. And I would suggest to you that's how it is for most of us. Progress, not perfection. And then it says, when we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. That's a pretty miraculous thing. I've seen that. So I'm going to pass it off to Katie joining us this morning to share her journey in this program with an emphasis on step 6 and 7 is Katie G. And Katie G is from Massachusetts. Katie is a dedicated member of Overeaters Anonymous, who's committed to the 12 steps and the 12 traditions as the way of life. And so it's with great appreciation that we welcome Katie to the line this morning. Good morning, Katie.
Hey, Larry. I'm assuming I can be heard.
You can. You're coming through loud and clear.
Awesome. Okay. Good morning, everyone. I'm going to get us started with a prayer. Excuse me. In a place where God shines through. Him and I are one, not two. I need not worry, fret, or plan. He wants me where and as I am. And if I be relaxed and free, I'll carry out his plans through me. So thanks to the group for having me this morning. I am Katie G. I am a recovered compulsive eater, anorexic and bulimic. I am abstinent today because of a loving God. And I just want this whole talk to be about God. Because the first part of step one is about the food and the rest is about God. One of the most powerful things I have heard in recovery recently is that I may not be where I want to be, but I'm not where I used to be. And that's kind of where the title for the talk came in. The 12 and 12 talks about I need to be content with patient improvement, but I will get there. First, I'm going to do a quick qualification. My first memories actually are not around the food. My first memories are feeling like I should be somebody else doing something else with some other people at some other time. And food, although I thought it was my problem, it was never my problem. It was the solution that I applied to my thinking. I heard an alcoholic say he needed a stiff drink on the way to kindergarten. And I can relate to that. I found food and it obliterated my thinking. It obliterated my fear. I have a pretty long track record of overeating and undereating, and I'm not going to bring you over the coals of that one, because if you're sitting in the rooms this morning with me, then you might too. And I have been 228 pounds in my life, and I have been 110 pounds. My life crashed and burned because of the disease of food addiction. I came into the rooms when I was 27, which was almost over 20 years ago. You do the math. And I have spent my formative years as a grown-up in Overeaters Anonymous, or maybe not as a grown-up, but let's say growing up. And when I first came into the rooms, I came into a part of OA that was really clear on the allergy of the body, but not so much on the obsession of the mind. And so I was really indoctrinated, thanks be to God, into a program of recovery that recognized, like, I'm naturally undisciplined and I really need to practice discipline, because I, you know, if I put certain foods, ingredients, and frankly, if I eat certain quantities, right, because I'm in Overeaters Anonymous, it sets up an uncontrollable craving for more. But what didn't happen is I didn't learn that I also have an obsession of the mind. I have a spiritual malady that can only be treated by God. And so this woman who is never comfortable in my own skin burned through the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. I put down my solution and I had no other solution. So you were my solution, or my sponsees were my solution, or my sponsor was my solution, or he was my solution. I put down the food and everything else became a solution because I had no solution. So I crashed and burned again, and thanks be to God, I live in Boston and they have really strong Big Book Recovery. I got into the rooms of Big Book Recovery, specifically around my sex conduct. I just really believed that nobody could ever love me if they knew what I had done in the area of sex and relationship conduct. And it was true, because I didn't love me. So I did the steps out of the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to step three, and I learned I have a new employer, which was amazing. I crashed and burned and realized I had never made a decision that was entirely based on fear, right? In the fourth step, that's what it taught me. And it really hammered home the ABCs for me, which are A, I am powerless and I cannot manage my own life. And B, that no human power can relieve my addiction. And C, that God can and will if he were sought. And I have to tell you, the story of my character defects and the story of my life is looking for human powers to relieve my addiction. I just want something outside of myself to step inside myself so I don't have to feel like myself. And the problem is that my spiritual malady can only be treated by God. I am in the world to live as God wants me to live. One of the examples is Bill C. that is, he talks about a mountain. I'm not going to pretend I know the name, so everybody else can tell me the name. But anyway, he describes this beautiful mountain, right? And he's looking at the mountain and he's like, wow, could I ever get that high on the mountain? And how beautiful it is. And then somebody puts a plate of fudge in front of him. And he says he spent the next 35 years looking for the fudge of life. And that is so true for me. I pursued the fudge of life and I forgot about the mountain. So today, I got to step five. I admitted to God, to myself, and another human being the exact nature of my wrongs. And I don't know what your experience was, but I was really brutalized by that first fifth step. Like, seeing myself as I really was and hearing my AA sponsor say to me, Katie, you keep telling yourself the lie. If I had what you had, I wouldn't feel the way I feel. If you did what I wanted, I wouldn't feel the way I feel. I mean, she was just all over me and it was amazing. It was absolute spiritual surgery. So I got to step six and I just wanted to be recovered. And so I thought, well, let me look at the big book super quick, right? Step six. Yes, of course I'm entirely ready to have all these defects of character removed. Like I saw that my life without the food, my life living on Katie was a complete mess. So yeah, get rid of all my character defects. Absolutely. And then step seven was a prayer. And I was like, sure, yeah, God, remove all these defects of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows, right? I just thought, let's have at it. What I didn't realize is that, thanks be to God, I moved through the steps and I learned our design for living. Living in step 10, the spot check inventory, step 11, the nightly review, prayer and meditation, and step 12, practicing the principles in all my affairs, I did not realize that for me, the crux of this recovery program has become step 6 and 7. I have character defects that I am completely powerless over. And unfortunately, they have not gone away. What I am here to tell you is that I am recovered today from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And that little girl who felt so uncomfortable in her own skin, I'm comfortable today. So I wanted to talk about some character defects that are active in my life and what I have seen change with frequency, intensity, and duration. Mostly, I'm going to reference the 12 and 12 simply because it has more material. I know it was created way after the big book, and it is not meant to be a study of the steps, but it sure is helpful for me. So let's get current with what step 6 and 7 are, right? So step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. That first time through the steps, as I said, I was entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. I have to say there's my character defect of greed right now, I'm not entirely ready. I am very comfortable with the greed that I'm demonstrating in my life every day, and I'm not so much sure God should take it. So I'm praying. For me, I'm really low bottom, and I have to be really badly mangled before I'm ready to give it up. So that is step six. Am I entirely ready? And for me, it's about, as a recovered woman, I do a step 10, identify my character defects, and I go to God. And I say, okay, God, I have this character defect. What do I do? Right? Like, what's my plan of action? And then I know I can't work on my character defects, but man, I have to have some sort of plan of action, if you will, because I can't keep stealing if I want God to remove my character defect of stealing. And so I go to God and I say, okay, God, what are my bottom lines? Like, how can I practice? So that is super helpful for me. I have settled into step six and seven, and there's this beautiful quote right in the beginning of step six that says, "This is the step that separates the men from the boys. Any person capable enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step six on all his faults without reservation, whatever, has indeed come a long way spiritually and therefore is entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own creator." And that is true for me today. It brought me such peace. Like, I'm gonna mess up. It's gonna keep happening. But the thing is, for me, again, what I've noted is that it has changed with frequency, intensity, and duration. And just a reminder, step seven, humbly asked him to remove my shortcomings. The coolest part about my shortcomings is they drive me to my knees. And for me, that's where I need to be. Like, God needs me on my knees. I need me on my knees. God doesn't need me on my knees, but I need me on my knees. I need to be an empty vessel, a hollow bone for God, because I don't know what should be removed from me, my character defects. I don't know what's good. I don't know what's bad, but God does. So I am seeing the time. So again, I feel like the crux of my recovery program lies in these steps. And I just want to say really quick that a character defect is a persistent negative personality trait, behavior pattern, or habitual way of thinking that hinders personal growth, creates problems in daily life, and blocks recovery from addiction. And where do my defects come from? Well, thanks be to God, the AA 12 and 12 and the Big Book teach me that the chief activator of my defects is self-centered fear. And when I first came into the rooms, it was really important for me to realize it wasn't just fear, like fear of snakes, it's self-centered fear. Fear that I'm going to lose what I have or I'm not going to get what I want. So let me just get right into my character defects that I want to share today. So I don't know if I'll get through all of them, but I'm certainly going to try. So the first character defect that I have been grappling with is pride. So for me, what I learned is that pride is an excessive, inordinate, exaggerated belief of one's superiority and sometimes inferiority, often leading to conceit and contempt for others. So when I'm in pride, I think I'm the best, or I think I'm the best of the worst. I get into image management. Straight up, y'all, I spent a lot of time working on this talk. I was really terrified of what you all are doing, sitting there thinking of me and criticizing me or not criticizing me. I am really into image management when I'm not connected to God. Pride makes me edgy. I lose patience. I grew up looking for accolades and praise and reassurance seeking. I grew up in the suburbs where it was very competitive to do well, succeed, excel, and be noticed. So what pride looked for me in the rooms of OA, I was stripped down to nothing when I came into OA. So my pride manifested itself as I wanted to be seen and important in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. I was arrogant. I was condescending. I was aggressive when I talked with people. And this was all because I was terrified, right? When I am fighting with my character defect of pride, I am fighting for my life. I became what the 12 and 12 talks about as the bleeding deacon. The bleeding deacon is one who is just as surely convinced that the group cannot get along without him, who constantly connives for re-election to office, and who continues to be consumed with self-pity. So for me, what that looked like in the rooms of Vision for You specifically, when I first came in, I had to share every day. If I wasn't sharing, I was taking it personally. I thought that everybody had a vendetta against me. My value and worth came from going to the meeting. If I didn't go to the meeting, I was terrified I was going to be left out. And even more recently with, you know, thanks be to God to our elder statesmen who made it harder for me to share every day. Like, I still was like counting days and counting minutes for me to share because I thought that I could only be okay if you guys texted me and told me I was okay. I thought I had to have all the answers. And today, you know, I did take a step back and start getting quiet in the rooms of Vision for You simply because I needed to put down my character defect of pride, right? I wanted to become an elder statesman who sees the wisdom of the group's decision, holds no resentment over his reduced status, whose judgment, fortified by considerable experience, is sound, and who is willing to sit quietly, KDG, on the sidelines, patiently awaiting developments. So that is, it was extreme that I had to shut my mouth for a long time, but it's what I needed to do to surrender this character defect to God. Another way in which my pride showed up was sponsoring. I was very controlling. I was very condescending. And again, I was very fearful. I just thought it was my job to fix, manage, and control people. And thanks be to God, I crashed and burned. You know, all of you who I have sponsored know how deeply controlling I was because I was so deeply afraid of that I wasn't okay. And even on outreach calls, I was, you know, called passionate or what have you. And, you know, I can say today that God has changed me. The reason I know, well, one of the reasons I know is that I often will talk about my pride and how it got in the way of my role in Overeaters Anonymous. And I have had people come to me and say, you know what, you sponsored me for a while and you treated me terribly and I can tell that you're different now. And that is such a remarkable thing for me. It is such a gift. I'm not saying that I don't do service and that service is not vital to my recovery because it is, but it's really about going to God and asking God, God, where would you have me go? What would you have me do? What would you have me say and to whom? So I'm not perfect with this defect of character, but thanks be to God, I'm better. When I was over sharing in Vision for You, God has blessed me with children and I was locking myself in the bathroom. I was wanting to share more than I cared about my kids' needs. I mean, that's not okay, right? Like, you guys know how hard it was for me to have these babies, and now I'm still reassurance seeking. So I have action plans with God today about how to keep the pride down. And one of them, honestly, is a reminder on my phone that says, kids not calls at 5 a.m. I'm grateful for that. Another character defect I want to talk about is vanity, which is inordinate, excessive desire for admiration, validation, and praise from others, often manifesting itself as a preoccupation with one's physical appearance, achievements, or social image, self-idolatry. So yes, it is important in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous for me to be working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. However, from the time I was a little girl, I was dealing with a tension of overeating and fantasizing about being the thinnest girl in the room. I wrote a book when I was 8 years old, and I got sent to the world of Oh No in the book, and the world of Oh No was filled with candy and then fat people with handcuffs behind their backs, because I knew that being fat would be a punishment. Those were the belief systems that I had. And I worshipped my scale. I got very anorexic and was very sick with needing to be the thinnest girl in the room. And at one point, and this is in recovery, I got a brand new graduate degree and I was working in my profession, and I would leave work without clocking out and exercise. I was willing to put my license, because I had a medical license, at risk so that I could exercise. When I first did the steps, it quieted down. But if you know me, you all know that about 6 years ago, I claimed another break with abstinence. I had become a stay-at-home mom, and I was in a self-imposed crisis. I felt empty. I wasn't going to God enough. I was a new mom. I didn't remember that my value and worth came from God and not from the scale. And I started exercising. And the next thing I knew, I was exercising 2 hours a day. I had a scale app where I was saying, okay, I have to lose more weight. And I was getting on the scale multiple times a day. I was addicted to my Apple Watch. My Apple Watch said jump. I said how high. I could not function. I'm not kidding. I could not function without my Apple Watch. So after a lot of spiritual counsel and talking to God, I claimed a break. I needed to get to a bottom again. I was so powerless to stop exercising, to stop using that watch, to stop using the weights. And I can tell you that this has changed for me with frequency, intensity, and duration. But I do have an important set of guidelines that me and God need, well, I need, that God gives me. So, for example, recently the scale has come up again. I have gotten really afraid in my life, and I bought a new scale that has numbers, which doesn't work for me, and I started getting on it. And I did a step 10, and thanks be to God for my beautiful step 10 partner pointing out I needed to get back to my bottom line, which is I have a blind scale, so it doesn't show me the numbers, because numbers activate a phenomenon, a craving inside of me for more weight loss, right? And so I put together a plan of not getting on that scale. And I'm going to be straight up with you guys. Like, I have done this many times. If you know me, you know that this is my story. I have driven over body scales with my car in my driveway because I have been so demoralized by the scale. But thanks be to God, I put a new action plan in place. God has lifted from me the obsession that I had over my Apple Watch 6 years ago, and I have an exercise plan, so I know when I'm exercising, but frankly, I know when I'm not exercising, because that is important for me. It is so important that I know my value and worth does not come from the number of miles I walk a day. And you know what's so funny is, like, I always want husband to tell me how beautiful I am. And because what I believe, honestly, is God kind of gave me a wink. I did some pretty intense step 10 work and went back to 6 and 7 and was really surrendered about my body. And do you know, my husband told me for the first time in 11 years that he loved my body, not once, but twice. And of course, it's a human power and it didn't relieve my addiction. I understand that. But I really believe that God was like, see, Katie, when you can let it go, the things you give to me are better than anything you could plan. So today, thanks be to God, I have my blind scale, I have my exercise plan, and I ask God to remove my obsession with self. So that is vanity. Anger, oh man, I don't want to talk about this. So anger is selfish, uncontrollable, vindictive, emotional response that stems from pride, greed, or thwarted personal desires, bitterness, passive-aggressive, explosive rage that aims to punish others or control situations rather than addressing the wrongdoings. And I am here to tell you that I am a mom and I am a wife and I have yelled at my children. If you are yelling at your spouse or your children and then getting on the lines of Overeaters Anonymous and practicing the principles, you are not alone. And you have nothing to be ashamed of. Anger is a character defect. But I can also give you the hope that yesterday, my older, who suffers from several neurodivergent issues, threw something at me, called me some names, and I didn't yell. And not only did I not yell, but I was able to practice patience, and I was able to be the peaceful mommy. If you know who I am, you know that's a miracle. And I can't tell you at what point God saved me from being angry. But I also can't tell you the last time I yelled at my husband. So with my anger, I can tell you, I have been an angry woman my whole life. I raged at my mom when I was young. I was brought to the guidance counselor with other little girls because we were all fighting. In college, I told all my friends I hated people. Like I spoke earlier, in early recovery, I was very harsh to sponsees. In early recovery, I lost 4 jobs with the same job title. I was fired. I was fired. And when I went to make amends at one of these jobs, the woman said, you know what, Katie, you have really admirable goals, but you have no people skills. I got out to my car. I started snot-nosed, messy crying. I did a step 10 and started cackling because she's right. I have been not learning people skills my entire life. I have been learning skills to deal with, to look for human powers to make me feel better, not how to, you know, play nice in the sand lot. I also, in early relationship with hubs, I would bang pots and pans with when I was jealous. And what did I do? What do you do when you have these character defects? You're in the rooms of OA. You have these character defects. They're coming up and they're not changing. You know, it's a God thing. I do a step 10. I see what the core fear is. What am I fighting for my life around? And then I go to God and I say, God, how do I practice the opposite today? And I have had to be content with patient improvement. But I also will tell you, with anger, I work hard, man. I work hard at not being an angry wife and not being an angry mommy. And that's not because I'm a good person. Like, please don't think I'm like showing off. But again, I'm on my knees and I am fighting for my life because I don't want to be an angry mom. Why? Not because I want you all to think I'm a good person, but because I don't want to eat today. And the thing is, if I start acting in ways that are contrary to kindliness, patience, acceptance, and love, eating will be a step up from my thinking. So it's about going to God and asking for a plan. And I am now, I have my own therapist. I go to parenting therapy. At parenting therapy, they talk to me about how it's my job as a parent to teach my kid to allow them to have their feelings, but to do it in a healthy manner. And I didn't necessarily understand that for myself. Like with step 10s, I always thought that the whole point was to get rid of the feeling. Now I know I go to God and I'm allowed to have my feelings. I'm allowed to be angry. I can't push them away. I cannot wish them away. But if I can go to God and I can feel my feelings and become entirely ready to have God remove this defect of character and then humbly on my knees say, okay, God, please take it. I am willing to go to any lengths. Please take it. I am telling you that my character defects have changed with frequency, intensity, and duration. My anger has changed. Okay, greed. So what it was like, well, when I was a little girl, I mean, ever since I was a little girl, I grew up in a very affluent suburb. And I got whatever I wanted whenever I wanted it. There was no emotional recovery, but I was spoiled. And greed is described as an intense, selfish, and insatiable desire to possess more than one needs or deserves, typically focusing on wealth, power, and food, driven by self-centeredness, acquiring resources at the expense of others. The 12 and 12 talks about when we were frustrated, we drank for oblivion. Never was there enough of what we wanted. So this is just another human power, right? My greed is telling myself the lie that if I had what you had, I wouldn't feel the way I feel. The 12 and 12 further talks about we now clearly see that we have been making unreasonable demands upon myself, upon others, and upon God. So I hit a bottom with greed in Overeaters Anonymous. I was shopping compulsively. I was going on Amazon.com and whatever I wanted to buy, whenever I wanted to buy it, I would buy. And there was a lot going on in my family growing up, but that is really what I thought I was entitled to do. And I was in recovery and wanted more than my fair share. The other thing I did, I don't know if you do this, but I hoarded food. And what I mean by that is that, like, let's say I used 7 bricks of tempeh a week. Based on my spiritual fitness, I can have 24 bricks of tempeh in my refrigerator because I'm scared. So instead of going to God, I'm believing the lie that if I had more tempeh, I wouldn't have to feel this way. It got to the point where spouse had to say to me, this is becoming a huge issue in our marriage. And thanks be to God, there are other 12-step programs, one of which I joined, and I got solvent. And I know this is an OA meeting, but I will say I am working another program. I got solvent and I started working the steps and I learned. So God, what is my action plan with greed? I need to pause. I didn't know that if you're going into a store, you need a list. If I don't have a list, I'm buying makeup at Whole Foods or a teddy bear. Do you know what I'm saying? So, like I said, I can still tell my spiritual fitness based on my groceries. Recently, I did a step 10 around it because my husband brought to me that it's becoming an issue. And I'll tell you, the deal is, it's not so much that I have backup because I did go through COVID and that was a scary thing. And taking up space in my refrigerator is okay and important. What's not okay is that for me, I'm looking to nurture myself with extra food in the fridge, which again is a human power. And what do the ABCs teach me? No human power can relieve my addiction. So what's my solution? 10, 6, and 7. So what, God, what is my action plan? How do I take inventory? What does it look like to buy only what I need for the week? How do I take inventory of groceries? Now, you guys may already do all this, but this is all new for me. This is just growing up in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. So this is definitely something that still plagues me, but I work with God and it's gotten better with frequency, intensity, and duration. And finally, I am looking at the clock. I want to talk about sloth and procrastination. So sloth and procrastination is a failure to do what one should, lack of care, energy, or motivation, postponement of tasks, despite knowing that there will be negative consequences. And the 12 and 12 talks about, consider too our talents for procrastination, which is really sloth in five syllables. Now, if you had told me that I was a sloth or I was a procrastinator, I would say absolutely not. I'm a Virgo. I'm type A. I get to places early. I get it done, right? But the thing is, what I've seen with continued abstinence, continued recovered abstinence, that when I don't want to do stuff, I don't do it. So, and I know you guys know what I'm about to talk about, but so 11 years ago, we got a dog. And as we all know, with a dog, you have to pick up the poop. Well, I didn't pick up the poop for years and years and years. And Hubs would say to me, hey, babe, do you think you can pick up poop? And it literally didn't even register to me that that was something I could do. It would go in one ear and out another. Because, you know, the 12 and 12 talks about being that rebellion dogs me at every step, which is so true. I am such a rebel. And the other area that I can procrastinate and be slothful is doctor's appointments or hair appointments. If I wake up in the morning and I don't like the way, and I'm doing step 11, right, I have to be very careful to consider what plans do I have for the day and to not cancel them. I have to tell you, I got to a point in when I was seeing a doctor that I canceled the appointment so many times that they kicked me out of the doctor's office. Why? Because it is not a spiritual principle to dishonor people's time. And it was very painful to learn how to show up. I remember in that first sort of realization of the defect of character, I canceled a hair appointment and my sponsor said, you need, and I did it at the last minute and she wasn't going to be paid. So my sponsor said, you need to pay for your appointment. And I did. Not again, not because I'm a good person, but because I don't want to eat today. But I can tell you, this sneaks up on me. When I was writing this talk over the weekend, a couple weeks ago, I rescheduled 3 physical therapy appointments, 2 doctor's appointments, and I went to a doctor's appointment, and I was so irritated with having to wait that I talked not to God, but I talked to ChatGPT, which is supposed to tell me what I want to hear, about the fact that the doctor was late, and ChatGPT said, yeah, go ahead and leave. So I'm not perfect, right? And I need a lot of accountability. Overeaters Anonymous has developed a tool called the Action Plan. Happy to talk about it. It's super helpful for me today. Again, I know it's a human power, but I do go to God. And I'm like, okay, God, what actions do I need to take today? Where would you have me go? What would you have me do? What would you have me say and to whom? It is about, for me, step 12, demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. If spirituality does not touch all of my affairs, it will touch none of them. So yeah, so I'm continuing to grow and change. I work for God today. I want to just say that another funny thing that I've heard that I really love is that being a human being is not a character defect. I have a permanent, progressive, and fatal disease. It requires regular work. It requires regular time on my knees, identifying my character defects over and over again. And I have to tell you, one of my favorite quotes out of the 12 and 12 in step 7 talks about the repeated humiliation of my character defects. I'm right with you. Repeated humiliation. I'm a recovered abstinent woman, thanks be to God, and I'm doing these things, but that's where the humility comes in for me. Like, I have shared with you my character defects today, not because I'm trying to be a braggart, and also not trying to say I'm sicker than the rest of you, but I'm trying to say I'm a human being, and I'm an addict, and I must do this spiritual work each and every day with you and with God, because I don't want to eat again. Because for me, to eat is to die. And I'm so grateful for my seat in Overeaters Anonymous. And I'm so grateful for my seat with all of you. And Larry, with that, I pass.
Katie, thank you so much. It's just an honest, authentic presentation this morning. Just a great demonstration of spiritual recovery and God's, you know, redemption. So appreciative. Me and a few others, more than a few others, have been listening to you this morning, and it came through loud and clear. So everybody, please stick around till the end of the recording. That's when we'll offer Katie's contact information. Let me give you the share ID for the presentation this morning. That number is 23,504. That's 23504. And now we're going to transition to Q&A. It's a wonderful opportunity to ask Katie G some questions. So if you have a question for Katie, press star 1 to unmute. I'll need your first name. And who has a question for Katie?
That's Chanel T.
Freya. Freya?
Kristen R.
Christine?
Christiana W.
Something W? Was it? Say it again.
Kiana W.
Kiana. Gotcha. Who else? Can you press star 1? Chanel, Freya, Christine, and Kiana. That's who I heard so far.
Pedro B.
Ken W.
Ken, gotcha. Thank you for
Amber
being kind
C.
to the old guy here. Something C. This that I was talking
Amber
about.
Amber C.
Amber, thank you. Anybody else? Okay,
Gloria,
let's go with
H.
this first. Was that Gloria?
Yes, yes, sir.
Okay, gotcha, Gloria. Okay, let's stop right there, and then we'll circle back if we have time. I got Chanel, Freya, Christine, Kiana, Pedro. I see Ken. I see Amber, Gloria. So let's start. If you're not Chanel, if you would be kind enough to mute the phone and mute your line, and we'll start with a question from Chanel. Good morning, Chanel.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you as always for your faithful service. And thank you for those behind the scenes as well. And Katie, thank you. Hi, I'm Chanel T, grateful and recovered compulsive eater by the grace of God today. I was going to ask you something big and earth-shattering, but instead, because I think it's so important and I don't know what it is, can you tell us what a blind scale is? A lot of us, including me, have that issue with scales. Thank you so much, Katie.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm so happy to share this with all of you. A former sponsee told me about this. So it is like legit life changing. It's a scale you hop on it and it gives you a code like LMNOP, and then you text your dietitian or whoever you decided, and they log on to a website, they look at your weight, and then for me what happens is my dietitian tells me changes or no changes for my food plan. So I, for me, you know, abstinence is the action of refraining from addictive foods and addictive food behaviors while working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. So maintaining a healthy body weight is important for me, that I'm not underweight and not overweight. And so I have a weight range that's been defined, not by me, but by my doctor. And then I do the code thing with my dietitian. And what's so freeing is I don't know the number. And I can tell you, not knowing the number, I just feel better in my skin. Like, I don't have those feelings of obesity, because the numbers aren't playing in my head. So if you want the link, shoot me a text.
Okay, thanks, Chanel. Next up, we have Freya, followed by Christine. Freya, good morning to you.
Good morning. Hi, Katie. Thank you so much. This is Freya H. in Colorado. So much good stuff. I have two questions, but I'll stick with one and then maybe come back around in the queue. You mentioned that you have a mantra of kids, not calls. And as a mom myself, I have found that to be part of my recovery, that I need to put boundaries around my time and program. But it seems like it's the opposite of what we often hear when we come into the rooms about, you know, going to any lengths and putting our program first. So when you're working with newcomers or people, you know, how do you, what's the message that you share with people when they are newer to program, or, you know, maybe trying to align those two very important ideas? Hope that makes sense.
Of course it does. Yeah, absolutely. It's super confusing, but it doesn't have to be. For me, my program absolutely has to come first, right? Like weighing and measuring and going to my sponsor and talking to my 10-step partner and whatnot. But it's things like, so when the first person was asking a question, my older daughter came in with tears in her eyes and said that it was an emergency and I had to help her with something while I was just on the phone. So it's things like that. Like I do my phone calls, I talk to my sponsor, I talk to my sponsees, but it's more like I make sure that they know that I'm there. So a lot of times I'll say, hey guys, I got to get on my calls now. Do you have what you need? So it's really about communicating with my family. But I have to say, like, everybody's got to know mommy does need to do these things. It's also about having really clear, to your point, boundaries and parameters. So, for example, I don't get on the phone after 3 o'clock. If you want to talk to me, don't call me after 3. Like, I love you, but I just can't. I got to practice these principles in all my affairs, unless you're my sponsee and it's an emergency. I don't have a program part of my life anymore. It's been very integrated, but I think as a mom, it's really important that you identify, you know, what my program boundaries are, what are my bare minimums, when am I going to do them, and when am I not going to do them, because I have to do that basic work in order to stay spiritually fit. And it is a moving target. What I needed when I had newborns is way different than what I need now. So talk to other mommies, stay abstinent, go to any lengths, and surround yourself with mommies. And I'm always honored to take a call and talk.
Okay, next up we have Christine, followed by Kiana. Christine, good morning.
Good morning. This is Kristen R. in Virginia. Katie, thank you so much. I've been listening to you for years on the meetings, and you sound different and really inspirational. And the humility that came through in your share was just amazing. And that's something that I am working on. So my question is, in the morning, I do my step 11, I get off my knees, and I start my day, and I forget. I forget to check in with God. I forget to, you know, turn everything over to God. And I have alarms on my phone every 3 hours to pray the seven-step prayer. But I have a really hard time, like, maintaining that feeling I have in the morning of connectedness for the rest of the day. Do you experience that? And if so, like, how do you handle it?
Yeah, that is such a good question. And I just want to say, like, welcome to recovery. Like, one of the things I love to remember is that God is not a feeling. God is a fact. So God is as close as my breath. So when I remember that I have forgotten, all I have to do is take a deep breath and turn my face. Like, what a beautiful line. Ready? God does not make too harsh turns with those who honestly seek. All I got to do is honestly seek. Like, I don't know if it was God's point, but like, I always forget God. That's why I have meetings. It's why I have phone calls. It's why I have fellowship. It's why I have literature around my house. It's why I have phone reminders, you know, and there are days that I remember God and there are days that I don't. And it's not a moral issue, right? It's just, am I going to continue? Like step 10 reminds us, continue, continue, continue.
Thanks, Kristen. Yeah, thanks, Kristen, for the question. Okay, next up we have Kiana, followed by Pedro. Kiana, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for both of your service. I have a question around the character defect of vanity and how to avoid going into false humility. So my specific question is, how do you know that you are relying on God for the removal of that particular character defect versus getting prideful as you are practicing the opposite and getting into false humility? I don't know, maybe not as much as self-deprecation, but just like a little bit like false humility to try to make a point to other people. Like, oh, I'm not trying to manage my image. I hope that makes sense. I'm looking forward to hearing your answer.
Yeah, I mean, I wish there was like a really clear-cut answer for you. Because there are times, and I'm sure other recovered fellows might feel this way too, there are times, I think it's in 11, right, where it talks about our inspiration. We may be guided by an intuitive thought or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. But then it says something like, you may not be right all the time. And I think that that's okay. So when I was oversharing in Overeaters Anonymous, God used that. There were many people. I mean, there were tons of people who didn't want to hear me share, but there were tons of people who wanted to hear me share. And so God used that. So I think that the good news is God will use everything. And if I just keep going to God, like God knows the desire of my heart. And if I'm just pumping myself up, I promise God's going to pull me down. He just does. And then what do? I laugh. I brush my knees off. I laugh. Okay, God, I'm human. Tell me what to do now. And don't take it personally and just do it differently. And then I go to my fellows and I say, how do you make sure you're not being vain? Because I was just acting vain. Listen to what I did. Right? So not really an answer. It's all about God.
Thanks, Kiana. Okay, next up we have Pedro, followed by Ken. Pedro, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks, Larry. Thank you, Katie, so much. I feel so fortunate that I showed up here, that I feel that God sent me to this meeting this morning. I'm really moved by your share. And I had a question, and then I came up with another question. So I would like to get a copy of the prayer that you did before you started. That's one thing. And the other thing is that if you've ever been depressed, I have this problem of getting sick and breaking my abstinence. And I've gone through depression, another episode of depression. And, of course, I broke my abstinence again. So if you've been depressed, did you change your program? How did you manage depression and continue working the program are basically the question.
Thank you, Pedro. And if you text me, I'll text anybody that prayer. I love it. So in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it encourages us to seek outside help. And one of the things that led to my exercise bulimia was postpartum depression. So I am quick to see where everybody's right. Religious people, doctors, nurses, sponsors, I take it all. And I just would really encourage you to use the appropriate professionals because they're out there for a reason. And that's what I got. I'd be happy to talk more with you offline too.
Thanks, Pedro. Okay, we have next up Ken, followed by Amber. Hey, Ken, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you. And Katie, thank you. So good to hear you. My question is related to the topic of the talk, where you say character defects, and then you quote out of step six in the 12 and 12, content with patient improvement. And I guess my concern is, for me, and I'll just say for me, to be content with just improvement is a dangerous place. And that I'm wondering where the superlatives fit into all of this. All of my defects entirely ready, that sense of the high ideal of God, dare I say the P word, less I get in trouble, perfection. Where does that all fit with this contentment with patient improvement? Thank you.
Yeah, Ken, I'm always glad to hear you. And what an excellent point, right? Like, what's the line? Content with patient improvement, like, we strive for spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. I have to believe that practicing the principles in all my affairs, God wants me to try and be like Him every single day, and I'm going to fall short. So I think that I'm hearing in the question is like, I can't be content and be apathetic. You know what I mean? Like, I can't be like, oh, well, at least I'm patiently improving while I go and steal something from the store. I think what you're referencing, what I hear you're referencing, is the intensity with which we work this recovery program because our life depends on it. I guess the content with patient improvement has been helpful to me because I am so hard on myself that it requires me looking at my life and saying, okay, well, I'm not where I want to be. I have not completely stopped this character defect, but I'm not where I used to be. So it's about continuing to strive, and maybe content is the wrong word. I don't know why Bill chose it. With God, I have no idea, but maybe content is the wrong word, like, because I continue to strive to in the image and like to live in the image and likeness of my Creator who is perfect. But I think for me, it's more like the humility of like, I'm going to be content today because I did make progress. Yeah, I think that's what I got.
Thanks, Ken. Okay, next up we have Amber with a question, followed by Gloria. Amber, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Ken, for your service, and thank you, Katie, for that wonderful share. That was just fantastic. I guess my question would be, you mentioned that you had a hard time giving up, or, you know, the rebellion about giving up these character defects. Is there one in particular that really gave you a struggle, and what finally shifted your willingness?
That is such a good question. So last week at this time, if you were talking to me, I was in a conversation about not caring about the excessive groceries that are in my house. I was like, literally, I don't care. I'm a compulsive eater. I'm going to take up the space that I'm going to take up. I don't care no matter what, no matter what, I don't care. And what helps me through is to acknowledge the rebellion that's dogging me at every step, to give voice to that, not to my husband, but to all of you, and to say, I really want to be ready. I really want to, but I don't understand why this is causing harm. And it's about seeing the character defect. I wrote about it. It's so funny because I remember saying, oh, I should share about this. I do daily free writing about our literature in addition to my 10 steps. So I wrote about why do I hoard and why do I have to have all these and where is it coming from and what's the fear? And then I did a step 10. Why is he mad at me? Why is me hoarding causing an issue in my life? And then I gave the step 10 away, and it was like, yeah, you know, why can't you just take up room? And then I talked to another fellow, and it was like, well, wait a second. You're trying to nourish yourself with human flowers again. So for me, it's about seeing the character defect and just being on my knees in that repeated humiliation, writing about it, talking about it, praying about it. In order to see change, this may not be what I'm supposed to do, but I've had to make whatever character defect it is a part of my daily life, like my prayer, my breath. How do you handle this? What do I do differently? Going to therapy, getting outside counsel. But it has to be part of my daily language, which is why I think 6 and 7 is the crux of my work. So just keep trying, keep showing up. Laugh at that inner teenager that I have that's like, whatever, dude. And my experience is a week later, I care. God changes my heart.
Thanks for the question, Amber. Okay, we have Gloria up next, and then we should have time for more questions. So next up is Gloria. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. So when I hear Katie, I want to go Katie. But anyway, I'm a late sleeper, late person. So I have the alarm set to listen to this meeting. So I started in the beginning. I heard what the introduction was, and then the beginning. But it's always said, I learned in early program, that what you hear is what you need to hear. So what I heard is what I needed to hear. When you said so many different powerful, profound things, make a list. I make the list. But then I go inside and then I just, want to just browse around and stuff like that. So, making a list, is one of the things that I'm going to remember, that just stick to the list. And you said about being rebellious. I think I'm obstinate. And so I wanted to say, is there a difference? There is a difference. Obstinate, I just can't be persuaded to do it, And I do go to my higher power, But I think I'm fighting the power. I don't know. But this was my main question, content with patience. Okay. My main question is, I feel like the person in the when they go to the carnival and then they pop up one thing, another thing pops up, and then they hit that and then another thing pops up. Because when I hear what you're saying about the different things that you've grown and learned to do, just because it's the right thing to do, my thing is that I have, the solvency, which one am I going to be working on? Because I can't handle, it's too many fires, on the whatever, the stove. And so if I'm working on my abstinence and someone says, now you need to work, do this or do that. If I don't have my abstinence down pat, I feel like going to this meeting and that meeting and that meeting is more confusing than it is helpful. So I wanted to ask the question is, do you do one thing first or do you do two things? Or what would be the resolve there? How many things should I be doing? Should I be working on, like you said, the CLA, the clutter? Should I be working on the NH.
Lori, I think, not to interrupt, but I think that makes sense. No, it's an excellent question.
I'm finished then.
Yeah, I got you, Gloria. Yeah.
Okay, because so I'll beat the dead horse. Thank you. And I'll pass
thanks,
so that
Gloria.
She can kick
me. Yeah, I got you. I hear you. I'll tell you, so I've been in the rooms for 20 years, and I could only do Overeaters Anonymous for a very long time. And there's a saying in program, and it's not in the literature, but it says to go with what's killing you first. And for me, first and foremost, my food addiction, my anorexia, my bulimia, my compulsive exercising and scale use and abuse, that's going to kill me first. And so I really had to throw myself into the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, with Overeaters Anonymous meetings, and get through the steps, right? Because that's where I have a spiritual awakening, and thanks be to God to the 10th step promises, where I'm placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected, right? So I had to get to that place of being safe and protected in neutrality with the food before I could look at anything else. So first things first, that's what helped me.
Thanks for the question, Gloria, and Katie for the answer on that. We still have time. If you have a question for Katie, press star one, give me your name, and we'll continue on.
Simma M.
Simma?
Lee H.
Lee?
Maura Z.
Anybody else?
Yep,
that's Maura. Was it Deb? Did I get that right? I got Deb. All right, let's go with this. Let's go with Simma, Lee, Maura, and I believe it was Deb, but I may have misheard you. So let's start, and then we'll see where we're at. Let's start with Simma. Good morning, Simma.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Kate. Katie. My name is Simma, grateful compulsive overeater living in recovery. And I really enjoyed your talk. I had to get off the line for about half an hour. I was talking to a sponsee, so I don't know if somebody else asked this question. But I want to know, what is a scale without numbers?
Yeah, you know what, Simma? We did talk about it. And if you text me, I'd be happy to tell you. But just real quick, it's a scale that shows you a code and not your body weight. And then somebody else can get the code so you don't have to deal with the numbers. It's
okay.
Like counting calories. Like, I don't count calories. I'm not spiritually fit enough.
Okay, thanks so much.
Yeah, Simma, thanks so much. That was a quick and easy one. Okay, next up we have Lee, followed by Maura. Lee, good morning.
Well, good morning, Larry, and good morning, Katie. Thank you so much for the wonderful talk. And you nailed me in many ways. Some of those deeper... I love the way you just went deeper into the step 6 and 7. My question is, you mentioned, and this may be something that Pedro brought up that I need to call you about, but you mentioned a plan of action. Maybe that was a prayer, but boy, I would love to know more about that. Thanks.
Okay. So If I hear you right, so Overeaters Anonymous has a new tool called Action Plan. So for me, I identify 3 attainable actions that I need to do daily. A lot of times it's pick up the dog poop, fold the laundry, make the bed. It's ways in which God wants, work on my Sunday special edition, contact the doctor. It's ways that God wants to use me. I'm a real disciplined person because of God, and so I commit that action plan. And then the next day, I report on the action plan, not as a way of punishing me, but as a way of saying, hey, yesterday I did not pick up the dog poop. Why can't I do that? Like, yesterday I did not make that phone call, and it needs to be made. Because I can get very vague about what it means to be accountable to God and in the job that God has given me, and I just do really well with small action items, not to-do lists, but small action items that I'm held accountable to, and then kind of problem solve. Like, what's going to help me to get that done today? Can I bookend that call? Can I, figure out what's going to help? Like, what would make laundry folding fun for you today, Katie? That sort of thing.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah. Lee, thank you for the question. Okay, next up we have Maura, and I'm not sure I heard the person after, but I wrote down Deb, but you'll identify yourself. Good morning, Maura.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks so much for your continued service. Katie, it is so good to hear you. It's been a long time. And I really appreciate your bottom level honesty. It is very refreshing. And I just wanted to let you know real quick that I completely understand about your beginning style of sponsoring, because I fell victim to that as well and had to make some serious amends. And I'm grateful that you brought that up. I wanted to know, Katie, are there specific things that you do to practice your Step 11 that are new and different since you've been on this character defect search and discovery and uncover and discard?
Thanks. I'm so glad to hear your voice. I don't know that it would be Step 11 necessarily as much as Step 10. For some reason, God put this person in my life who I do Step 10 work with 6 days a week, which is kind of ridiculous when you think about her schedule and my schedule. I don't know why God has made it work, but he has. And the reason that's important is I really believe in Step 5, where it says we find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. And so what has helped me so much about defects of character is identifying, you know, the character defect, which for me comes from my spot check inventory. And then hearing her remind me, like, go to God, make an action plan, or Katie, what are your bottom lines, or what is your one, I don't remember how she said, what is your one brave thing that you're going to do today? And, you know, the other thing that's been miraculous is to have somebody reflect back to me that I've changed. There's somebody on this line who, like 6 months ago, was like, do you remember how attached you were to your Apple Watch? And I was like, no, because I don't remember. I can't see my own ears, right? But you guys can. And it's just amazing to trudge along fellows that are so ignited about their recovery that they're working on things too. The other thing is my, you know, that little action plan. I know that the tools are, you know, whatever, but it's a really good tool. It has helped me to really see, like, and learn from others what it is I can do differently. So great question and great to hear you.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Maura. Was there a Deb? Did I hear that right?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, good. Deb, good morning, Deb.
Yep. I'm Deb Z from Illinois, and Katie, thank you so much for sharing this morning. I have been in and out of this meeting because of different commitments, but I missed some of the questions. Maybe somebody's already asked this, but I did hear the part about when you said you claimed a break from abstinence, and initially I thought, oh, that's a cool way of describing a relapse, but is that what you meant? Is it related to a relapse, or is it some other concept that I'm not getting? That's my question.
That's such a beautiful question. So it is a relapse. I think what can be confusing that I'm still kind of processing through is that I relapsed in Overeaters Anonymous by eating my weight and measured food plan and over-exercising and getting really underweight. So it's not your typical relapse. And so I try and be more clear about and intentional about what happened. So I did claim a break in my abstinence. So I claim my abstinence date to be October of 2020, not when I entered the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. But again, I'm very choiceful, or I'm very mindful about my words, because I want people to hear that being underweight and over-exercising for me was a form of relapse.
Thanks, Deb. I think we have time perhaps for maybe one or two more questions if they're out there. So I'm going to give you guys that opportunity to press star one. If you have a question for Katie. Okay. Well, I heard somebody. Who's that?
Joe.
Oh, hey, Joe. Okay. Anybody else? If not, we'll wrap up with Joe. Okay, let's do that. Joe, good morning to you.
Good morning. It's Joe from Ohio. Katie, I've been listening to you for years, and I remember maybe one of your last special editions when you talked about discovering your higher power. I'm curious to know what was the turning point when you recognized the spirituality rather than the weight and the food from the program. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's evolving, if that makes sense. So every day my relationship with God has to grow bigger than the day before. I don't think that there was a distinct time, I mean, maybe going through the steps, but I think I've had spiritual awakenings. I think I have had, and I continue to have spiritual awakenings along the way where I bottom out, especially around the body weight, and with the food years ago, you know, I absolutely felt at a bottom, but I also believe that thing where it says, you know, if you think you're at your bottom, you can keep digging. Like, my bottom is actually the grave. Like, this disease will take me anywhere, and so my recovery has to take me everywhere. I have to keep going deeper with God. And I'm also somebody that likes to do the steps really regularly, as in 1 through 12, because I get stinky and I need to take inventory. Starting with step one, I need to remember my powerlessness and my unmanageability. So I hope that answers your question. With that, I pass.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. And thanks to everyone, and most especially Katie. We just are so appreciative of your presentation and authenticity and honesty and all that stuff today. It was terrific. So we will, I'm going to first give the share ID number again for KBG's presentation this morning. That number is 23,504. That's 23504. And once we end the recording, we'll ask Katie for her contact information. But we're going to close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164 in the Big Book. And I'll read that now. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.